Hello and welcome to the I Hear Design podcast, your source for interior design and architecture news, interviews, and opinions. I'm your host, Robert Nieminen, and I hope you are well wherever you're tuning in from. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about acoustics in the built environment, a topic that's generated a lot of interest in recent years as more architects and designers have focused on occupant comfort as part of the wellness conversation happening around interiors, and for good reason. A 2019 study by Radius Global Market Research and Interface titled, What's That Sound? Identified how sound and acoustics impact employees and business environments. The survey revealed that noise negatively impacts nearly 70% of employees' concentration levels, productivity, and creativity, and 44% of those surveys said their employers haven't done anything to address the issue, which is a little concerning. And with acoustics and occupant comfort having direct ties to WELL and FitWELL certification, for example, it's a conversation I think we'll be revisiting for quite some time as more projects are built to these rating systems. For those who want to better understand the problem and, more importantly, how to mitigate it, stay tuned, because in this episode, I sat down with Slavi Younger, founder and partner of acoustical product manufacturer Frash, to discuss the drivers behind the heightened interest in acoustics, an explanation of what NRC ratings mean and don't mean, how acoustics should be considered across different project types, and much more. Be sure to grab a pen and notepad or your favorite notes app as Younger shares some practical and actionable advice in this engaging conversation. Have a listen. Well, hi, Slavi. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been a little while since you were on last. I know we've had you on the podcast before, but I know our editor-in-chief of INS, Anne-Marie Martin, recently caught up with you earlier this year for an article that we ran about acoustics in the post-pandemic workplace. So just as a very quick plug to our listeners, if you missed our May-June issue, head over to ins.design/magazine to find the issue in our archives. Turn to the article that's titled What's That Noise on page 32 for some expert tips on specifying for better acoustics and addressing this important issue. And Slavi, you actually had characterized acoustic solutions today in that article as quote unquote must-haves and not nice-to-haves, which is why I wanted you on the podcast to talk more about that characterization. And so we want to build on that conversation today and go in depth about acoustics, not just in the office, but in other commercial spaces as well, why it's so important, and just some considerations for our listeners that they should keep in mind as they design projects to, you know, help improve occupant comfort when it comes to noise. So with that being said, you know, we're hearing a lot about the importance of acoustics in the built environment lately, you know, no pun intended, but why would you say there's so much interest and attention being paid to acoustics these days? Like, what would you say are some of the drivers behind this focus and that makes it such an essential conversation to have?
It's a great question. Yeah, so I think more attention is being paid what impact of buildings have an environment, right? That's kind of where we started. And right after that, I think what we have moved, which is a beautiful thing to see, is how do these buildings have an impact on us as being healthy human beings? You know, we've done some really obvious, well, they seem obvious now, but they used to not be, like, you know, the quality of air is definitely better than it used to be. We pay a lot of attention to having ample amount of natural light, which those are all critical to our well-being. And, you know, with sound, it's one of those things, it's like the last thing you think about, but it's the first thing you notice. And why? Because it's just as critical to how well we perform, how well we do. I mean, if I was to use a really extreme example, just to kind of make you guys think about, you know, how you feel in different acoustical environments. If you think about like a busy train station and how that can evoke kind of that stress feeling, right? Versus you just walked into a spa or yoga studio, you know, yes, like that suddenly you're like, oh, my shoulder, you know, not that we really examine ourselves, but, you know, your shoulders would relax, your breathing would even out. And that has to do with the lighting, the smells, sound. Mm-hmm. Sound is absolutely critical to that. So somewhere between these two extremes is where you should be during the day, right? Mm-hmm. This overstimulation that comes from extreme reverberation, it can be very, very unhealthy And as we create more healthy environments, you just can't overlook that. And there's a couple other things really that has happened. We have, as we were building spaces that are a little more open spaces, remove lots of walls, we kind of created a bigger problem for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. There's more volume, there's more reverberance in a space. And it's also interesting what has coming back after COVID have done for us, right? Now we work differently. There's not really always necessarily one seat per one person, right? There's a bit of a hybrid models. We don't necessarily have assigned seating. So we have to think about how the acoustics work with that. And even what you and I are doing today, right? We're talking to each other over technology, right? And this is a very common way we all communicate these days, which also adds another element to what your soundscape, how important your soundscape is. Because if I happen to be right now in something very high reverberation type things, I'm not just ruining the day for myself, but I'm ruining your day as well, because it would be super unpleasant for you to listen to it. And since you're recording it to whomever else you might listen to it later.
Yeah, that's true. That's such a good point. And especially on the as we're recording a podcast, I mean, it's a perfect illustration for how important acoustics are, right, in recording. And you know, you touched on so many great points there, just about how sound. I love that you said that sound is one of the last things we think of, but one of the first things we notice, right? And I think it goes to that point of, you know, when people say when you walk into a well-designed space, like even people that aren't designers, like they know it just like sort of intuitively. There's just this sense of I'm in a space that's pleasing, and whether it's visual or whether it's with the acoustics, it is noticeable. But to really draw attention to that and focus on that is such a big part of it. And to your point too about just, you know, the workplace and how people are working differently. You know, we saw that swing from the open office and people just feeling like they're in a fishbowl and, you know, having the headphones on to just sort of indicate, hey, I'm doing focused work now. Like I need this acoustic privacy. And so, to your point, though, about designing spaces that are more, you know, acoustically pleasing or effective in mitigating noise, I know there's a lot of talk around, you know, NRC ratings and maybe even some misunderstandings among, you know, designers and specifiers. So my next question for you is, you know, can you talk a little bit more and explain, you know, how NRC ratings work in terms of acoustical products specifically? Like, what do they mean and what should designers be paying attention to?
Yeah. So good question. I think it's all the reverberation time and NRC and this and that that ends up feeling like acoustics is really complicated, but it really doesn't need to be. So what is NRC? NRC, if you can just get tiny bit technical here, sure. It's an acronym for noise reduction coefficient. And what it essentially means is it's a shortcut for us to know how is this particular material going to interact with the sound in our space. The scale goes from 0 to 1. So think of 0 as really reflective surfaces, meaning no sound is absorbed. Think hard stuff like concrete, sheetrock, wood, things like that. And then on the other side of things, which is 1 or 100, think of things that are really poofy and porous. And what happens then is when sound wave reaches that kind of material, it gets trapped in all those nooks and crannies that the material has. Therefore, it can't bounce from the hard surface and create that reverberation. That's really what is the unpleasant thing when we talk about sounds that don't work well. So when you look at your design, you should really think about, okay, on this NRC scale, how much of my stuff fits close to 0 and how much of my stuff is a little closer to 1? We'll kind of tell you where your ratio is. You know, if your design looks like you just are, everything there is just reflective, let's slow down and let's figure out how we can balance it out, right? There's a couple rules of thumb to think about that really kind of make it a little more confusing, which is when you see material NRC, it is often just how it was tested in a lab, meaning it was suspended in the air. So that's why I'm saying this is, you got to think about after that application matter. Because if you can suspend your products from the ceiling, that's the number one option. That's what you want to do. That's where it's going to perform the best. The second option that we have is attach it to a wall, right? But if you direct attach a material to a sound absorptive material to a wall, you are reducing its performance. So if the stated NRC is 0.8, you very, very likely reduced it down to 0.4, right? Almost half. So designers do know the tricks. You know, we sometimes fur out the walls to create the air cavity behind it. And so really paying attention to the difference between, are they listing the NRC for the material, or are they also listing the NRC of the final product and how it's going to perform in the state it's meant to be used for? So that's when it gets kind of technical. That's when it gets a little tricky. But it's really, you know, it's really important because you want to find, you don't want to overspecify it, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but you want to get to that sweet spot that will absorb just enough so the space actually is functional from soundscape perspective.
For sure, for sure. So just to clarify, I mean, so on the NRC rating, I think you mentioned, is it for the product itself, you know, suspended, or if it's like, you know, in an application, do the NRC rating sort of, if a designer's looking at that, would they know that just by looking at the rating, or do they have to sort of dig into some of the technical specifications from the manufacturer?
Yes and no. It depends how okay. It's written, right? So yeah. If let's say if it just says, oh, this highly absorptive material sound absorption is 0.8, and really doesn't clarify in what conditions, then I would be assuming that's really suspended in the air. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can find quality products where if it's a baffle, it like in our instance, right, it will clearly state this was measured in the intended use, right? So it's gonna be.
Right.
Our wall products will say it will be the same thing, right? This is what how it absorbs when attached to a wall, right? Sure. So I would just definitely pay attention to that. There's some products that can work either way. Mm-hmm. So there might be just the best case scenario NRC listed, but that's not necessarily going to be such, you know, if it gets installed, let's say on a hard surface.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, thank you. That's super helpful. I think for listeners, especially just to know, you know, what to look for. And speaking of, just those types of products in specific applications, like what would you say are some of the similarities and maybe differences in designing for acoustics across different building types? You know, we were talking about offices. How is it different for hospitality or education, for example, or even healthcare? I mean, obviously those can be really noisy environments. Are there unique considerations that designers and architects should keep in mind when looking at the specific applications?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you pull up, and I guess if you've never seen it, you can certainly find it very easily online, the recommended reverberation chart. When you look at the chart, you very quickly will see that the things that are on the far low end are things when clarity of speech is critical, right? So more critical the clarity of speech, the lower the reverberation needs to be. That's in one sentence, really essentially what we are striving for. That's why something like a recording studio would be all the way as close to zero as possible, right? We try to create what we would call dead spaces, right? You don't want the reverb, you don't want the reflection, you want that crisp, clear voice coming. And right after that, you'll see school, right? Education. A big chunk of how we learn is by exchanging information, right? So in schools, there's a little bit of more nuance as to the age of the children. The younger the kids, the lower the reverb needs to be. You want to be somewhere about like 0.4. Mm-hmm. That just means 0.4 seconds from the initial noise, the sound dies off. That's kind of what that means. And it can go all the way to 0.8 as the kids get older or as there's more collaborative type activities happening. Libraries are the same, and hospitals are similar to schools as far as recommendation, but for completely different reasons, right?
Right.
So what happens in hospitals is you don't want your nervous system to be activated by human speech and noises in your environment, because your body tends to try to play it safe. It wants to be like, oh, wake up, you might be in danger. The problem is with that is we want you to rest, right, in order to heal. So that's kind of where we want to balance those two. What's really one of the most interesting things is hospitality, because hospitality is the only one where it's not so straightforward, right? In hospitality, you want to hear everyone at your table, but you don't necessarily want to hear the folks at the other table, right? So like a school application wouldn't work. In school, you want one teacher and everyone in that classroom, regardless where they are in the classroom, you want them to be able to hear the teacher as well as possible. So hospitality, you have all the different considerations. You have considerations of a number of folks that are in there at different times, right? How much, also what the space is being used for. Is this more of a fine dining experience versus casual dining, right? How dynamic you want the space to be. You know, I could definitely geek out on that subject. You know, there's even things that people don't really think about called Lombard effect, which all that means is we all intuitively start raising our voice the louder the space is. And you know what I'm talking about, Rob,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's louder because, I mean, why would you talk? You're talking because you want people to hear you. So what ends up happening is we are talking louder because we are in a loud environment, but that causes the environment to get louder. Therefore, we talk louder. And it's this accumulative thing, which is called this cycle that we end up in, which is called Lombard effect. But what happens after that is, imagine you're at this banquet, right? And in a normal situation where the acoustics are pretty good, the math is that the groups are usually in about 3 to 5. That means one person speaks and other, you know, 2 to 4 people are listening. However, when this Lombard effect goes up, suddenly it's, you no longer can be in a group of 5. We have to speak one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. So we can, you and I can understand each other, right? But what we also have done, we have increased the number of speakers. So that's another accumulative issue that we've created. So, you know, if you were talking about math and fine dining, you want to have at least 80% of the ceiling be treated and about 30% of walls to be treated. You want a little less in casual dining, but it doesn't mean nothing. Like, let's not confuse things like, oh, I want this to be energetic versus unbearable, right? Those are two different scenarios. Yeah.
No, I've definitely been in some casual dining places that have been so loud you can't hear the person next to you, you know. But to your earlier point, just about hospitality, I mean, I know, you know, I had a relative that was in a hospital and, you know, dealing with some, you know, AFib type things with their heart, and it was, the noise would trigger that thing. And so it was such a difficult situation because of, you know, there's no way to abate the noise once, if it hasn't been treated for that, and just kind of compounded the situation. So I know that, you know, the well-being of occupants is so important. And that leads me to my next question, really, about, you know, how does acoustical design relate to specifically or impact the well-being of occupants in a space? So, and how can designers really ensure that the environments that they're designing can support occupant comfort and health when it comes to sound specifically?
Yeah. If we can go back about 200,000 years.
sure.
Right. So, you know, we as human beings really evolved outside, right? Mm. What that also means, all of our functions have been optimized for being part of nature, right? So in our sense, when we speak specifically to hearing, it's been optimized to be very sensitive to human speech. Why? Because we depended on each other for our survival. So it's really critical that you really notice all the conversations around you. We also hear human whisper better really than anything else. The other thing we pay a lot of attention to not that we want to, it's just what we naturally do, is dynamic sounds, meaning the big changes, you know, clunks and noises and things like that in our environment for the same kind of reason, right? To stay alive, right? This could potentially mean danger. So we need to be aware of that. So all these things that have been really good for like the hunter-gatherer type are really not so good for a knowledge worker, right? The person that's indoors, because the nervous system that's continuously activating these things for us is really keeping us from being able to focus on, let's say, a focus work, right? And, you know, hospital healing and things like that, because our nervous system really is super basic, right? It doesn't require any higher thinking. And it's only trying to really do two things. It's deciding, are we safe or are we not safe? And when your nervous system is thinking, oh, you know, this is maybe not a safe, it's really just a jackhammer outside, you know, construction. But your nervous system is doing a few things to just in case, right? So it's releasing cortisol, it's releasing increasing your blood pressure, it's actually constricting your digestion just so that you're ready if you need to fight or flee. Mm. And that's really not the conducive environment for health. These things, not just that it makes it unpleasant, it makes a day stressful and you might have a headache at the end of the day, there's a cumulative stress to your body, so you can actually develop not mental and health ailments that just kind of stay with you, right? So that's kind of really critical as far as that. So when you're designing, thinking about who is going to be using it, how is this space going to use? Can I do open ceiling or do I need to do closed plenum option? How many occupants is it going to have? Is my focus work a little too close to the hallway where people walk? So that's that disruption, right? Every time you pick up on that human speech, how do we kind of avoid some of those very common mistakes and issues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you touched on earlier just our connection to nature in general. And that sort of leads us to another conversation that's been really sort of coming to the forefront in design, and that's about biophilic design. Can you talk a little bit about how products that are designed for acoustics can also support this trend toward connecting with nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so biophilic design really just means our innate tendencies to prefer nature, right? Or mm-hmm. things that remind us of nature. And I think this whole conversation kind of was like, let's go back to basics, right? So we prefer nature or what reminds us of nature, which would mean shapes, colors, and also soundscape, right? There are no walls, when you take a walk through the park, right? So you don't get that reflection back at you. So there absolutely is a way where you can, as you're designing, you can select materials that are doing the absorption for you and happen to be in the shape of natural shapes or like some of our colors, right, that we find like greens, blues, and things like that, and neutrals that reminds of nature and really kind of creates sort of this calming effect. Also things like, just sort of movement, like ceilings where it just has a little bit of a natural wave, all these different things you can make. And hopefully the whole idea really is, can we create things that happen to be sound absorptive, that match the design intent, that are not a thing where I've designed it, I love it, but now I need to consider sound, and now I have to add these ugly things I don't want in here just to mitigate issues, right? How do we essentially start the design with all this in mind, right? Do we have the right color, shapes, and sound absorption to nurture the human that's going to be using the space?
Sure. Yeah, you don't want to necessarily cover everything in felt or whatever, because I know
there's
been a lot of that going around too. I've seen at some of the trade shows, it seemed like that's coming into play a lot. So, but yeah, that's interesting to have it support the design itself, but then also mimic some of those shapes and that as you mentioned, like on the ceiling, I've seen those wave type forms with baffles and things like that that evoke those connections to nature. So, I know acoustics and design can, I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, can seem kind of complicated. And some of the larger firms, that I'm aware of, they often will bring in acoustical consultant, things like that. Do you have any advice for designers at maybe smaller or mid-sized firms that don't have, acoustic experts on staff or be able to hire consultants? Are there some best practices that maybe they could keep in mind?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In most instances, if you partner up with a manufacturer that lives and breathes acoustics, they can absolutely give you a really solid advice on how to approach it. I can speak how we do things here more than others. So I can tell you this, that our estimating team here in our building, I always say that there's like that's the smartest group in this room. They're not a traditional customer service. What they are is a bunch of engineers, right? So if you approach them with the basics that we need to have, like, this is the space, this is the size of my space, this is what's going to be used for, and I'm thinking this and that product, where should I put it and how much of it should I put in, right? They will do the calculation for you. They will give you recommendations so you can use it. Sometimes we are very afraid to do that, but I can tell you that the general recommendations are very good. I would certainly not skip acoustician if you're designing for music experience, because then there's like a whole bunch of other things you need to consider, right? This really need to be involved. But for the day-to-day spaces where you need to be comfortable when you do focus work, where you need to be able to exchange ideas without feeling like bothering everyone, that kind of a run-of-the-mill spaces absolutely can be figured out by really just the basic advice. And, here's a thing I can tell you is a couple like rules of thumb. There's like a 30% rule of thumb. So if you look at your space and you figure out the square feet of your flat surfaces, meaning your walls, ceiling, and floor, and figure out what the 30% of that is, mm-hmm. you introduce that much material, highly sound absorptive material into the space, you will get a desired effect. So that's kind of the rules of thumb. But one thing I have to tell you, Rob, that what we actually do see a lot of is overspecifying, if you can believe it. So I think that might be with this whole discomfort, right? So oh, let's just put more just so we're safe thing, mm-hmm. or maybe some older device from a different project being used. So if you pick something like a baffle, right? Sometimes we'll see that, you know, they're like, oh, we put these baffles 6 inches apart just because that's what we do. But it's not necessarily always required. It depends what's the volume of the space? What's the space going to be used for? And also then it's like, okay, what is the absorption of each individual baffle. So maybe looking at that, we've had plenty of times where we're like, well, these actually could be 12 or even 16 inches apart, and you will get the desired effect. So what we just cut the budget by half. So this happens all the time. I would definitely recommend that you have someone to look over your stuff. We see this all the time. The thing is that there's the sweet spot you want to get to with acoustics. Mm-hmm. But for every additional baffle you add, the change is so nominal that human ear will not notice it. So you're really just sort of spending money. Mm-hmm. But I get the thing because there is a sweet spot. If you don't get to the sweet spot, your customer will be upset. They'll be telling you, we spent all this money and it's not mm-hmm. working. So knowing where that is critical. And I think really, honestly, if you stop maybe overspecifying and kind of finding that sweet spot by getting advice and things like that, maybe fewer of these application will get cut out, because that's another mm-hmm. thing we see. And I think I wonder if a lot of the restaurants, they had the best intention of doing some acoustics, but then, you know, at the tail end, like, oh, you just mm-hmm. take it out. Let's see how bad it is, right? Right. And we'll just deal with it later. I feel like that sometimes happens. So there's a couple things, right? Get good advice. Educate the client too with this is not, acoustics is not nice to have. It's like I like to say, it's must have. You know, mm-hmm. it comes in so many different forms. We can find the sweet spot where it works with the design intent. It's the space still will be beautiful. And most importantly, it's going to be usable. Like your customers will want to stay. I mean, we've made fun of restaurants here, but one of the latest CEUs we've built here. So I've done so much research. So it's so fresh on my mind is mm-hmm. how 60-year-olds said, I was like 90% of them said if restaurants weren't so loud, they would use them much more. Sure. Because what also happens once you get older, I think the stats said that the largest group in the United States is people over 60. Pretty mm-hmm. much everyone has some hearing loss when you're 60-year-old. And what happens with hearing loss, you really start to struggle with compensating for all that reverb around you, right? So mm-hmm. you no longer can understand where you and I, we can still sort of like, maybe it's enjoyable. We can still kind of have a conversation in a semi-loud restaurant. Once we mm-hmm. age, that becomes not an option, right? So how much business is lost to people that might have the funds, that want to have the experiences, but choose not to do it because the soundscape isn't how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Just as far as, you know, the occupants and people who are aging, that the acoustics are that much more important in a space like a hospitality environment where, yeah, it's difficult even for me sometimes to sit and have a conversation and how much more that is. And so as we're hearing more about design for inclusivity and universal design strategies that really take into consideration all occupants' needs and you know, whatever their hearing levels might be, that's just such a great point. I'm glad you made that. So thanks for that. So Slavi, as we're kind of winding down our conversation, do you have any sort of maybe parting thoughts about, you know, that the role of acoustics play in interiors today? Any kind of last bits of advice for our listeners?
You know, I kind of want to end this with really acknowledge the folks that work in built environment. I feel like the interior designers and the architects are really spearheading the sustainability and building for us the best places they can. And it's really, really great to see, because ultimately, you know, we have just this one planet. So let's be better stewards of it. And also, we all just have this one life. So let's build spaces where you can really thrive And if we here can in small part play a small role to help you design for those, we just greatly appreciate you and really hope we get to do some fun projects, you know, that are happy, healthy, and super cool, right? We can't skip the super cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great observation. And yeah, especially about the sustainability piece. And I know our listeners out there are doing just fantastic work in that area of building, you know, spaces that are just, you know, environmentally friendly and reducing their carbon footprints and all the rest of it. So that's great. Thank you so much. One final question for you, Slavi. So where can our listeners go to find out more about acoustics and the products and solutions that Frash offers?
So we're very easy to find. If you just go to our website, it's frash.com, which is frasch.com. Mm-hmm. You can see all the possibilities, all the available products, and connect with us. You can certainly connect through us with that. But if you're desperate to get the estimator advice, they live behind quotes at frash.com. You can email them and they will give you the technical answers on whatever you might be working on or struggling with.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you again, Slavi. Thank you for being here and thanks for sharing your insights with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, great. Well, for our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. And as always, be well, everyone.